Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. It's also Fukushima irradiated, which is really good for the environment because now everybody's got a part-time job as an eco light bulb, which is good for the mercury contamination in the soil and the water. Did you know that one of those mercury light bulbs, just one of them, with the virtual microscopic quantity of mercury in them, can contaminate 20,000 litres of groundwater? You know that? You just put one of these bulbs in a landfill, and that's what happens. If you break them, you have to institute emergency protocols. Rubber gloves, you know, a jar with an airtight lid. And you actually got to leave the room for about half an hour or something like that until the mercury vapors dissipate. That's how poisonous and dangerous it is, right? And then you have to sweep it up, make sure you get every single little tiny little bit of speck of that glass, and you've got to put it in that resealable jar, take it to a specialist disposal facility, and pay a fee to get rid of it. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm not kidding. I've read it up. And dig this. Guess how many people actually do that? Like nobody. They just chuck them in the bin. All goes into the landfill, contaminating all the groundwater with mercury. Thank you! And the thing is, what's worse is that that's actually the only viable option to get rid of them. Because when you take them to the facility to get rid of them, they don't actually take them, and they say, no, we can't take those. and then the New Zealand government takes a while, some years back, saying that we're going to outlaw incandescent light bulbs to ensure that only the mercury brain-numbing light fixtures are the only thing that will be available for everybody to buy. You can only buy poisons. You can only buy mind control weapons for your home. Ooh. And I know there's people talking about mind control weapons. I'm not joking about that either. There's been studies. These things frack your brain up. They mess you around somewhat. Hey, maybe my brain's a little bit fracked because of this radio show, because when I do it, I've got these gargantuan, you know how energy saver bulbs are about the size of a fist? Maybe smaller. These things are about four times the size of a fist, easily four times the size of any light bulb, and there's four of them. So that's like, 16 light bulbs above me? Mercury-filled ones? Sure hope I don't break one of those puppies, otherwise this place will be like a meth cook's house, you know? Just contamination all over the walls and the ceiling and what have you. Now, furthermore to mercury being in the light bulbs, it's also in your frickin' teeth. I'm not joking about that either. The American Dental Association, the ADA, not to be confused with the ADL, although, never mind. They came up with this propaganda campaign a while back, demonizing dentists who use gold teeth because, they're just ripping you off to try to do it expensive. Use the amalgams, which have the most deadly neurotoxin named mercury known to man in it. Yeah, and get a root canal while you're at it so that it provides a blood flow directly to the bottom of your gum for the mercury to seep out of and go right into your heart ventricles. That's what they do. And goodness knows what kind of damage it's causing. We know that it's causing Alzheimer's. Had some lady had several mercury teeth, amalgam fillings. Sorry, I accidentally tell the truth sometimes. Have all of her fillings removed properly by a proper dentist? Just remember, if you're going to get your amalgam fillings removed, you've got to know that dentist knows what they're doing, because you can mess them up and hurt yourself even more. But anyway, this lady managed to go see a good one. Forget the name of the dentist, but still a good story. She got all of them removed, and her Alzheimer's vanished, right? Within hours of the procedure finishing. Hours, okay? People are like wandering around going, oh my God, how are we going to cure Alzheimer's? This is so terrible. They make shark movies about it. Oh, obviously the best way to cure your Alzheimer's is to grow sharks with giant frickin' brains and then harvest their brain material and then put it and then put it on your brain cells, right? And help them to regrow. No. How about this? You stop purposely contaminating people with mercury. Look, cures aren't necessary if you don't get sick in the first place, and if you don't have disease and cancer causing cramp all over the place all the freaking time, you might actually somehow remain healthy. What a radical concept. Hey, in fact, it is a radical concept, especially if you're a medical doctor. There's only one field of health that they don't teach to medical doctors. And guess what? That's right. Nutrition. Nutrition. A simple thing we can do in terms of our health, and they don't teach it. No wonder everybody gets sick. No wonder there's several doctors out there that are able to prescribe cancer medication, $50 plus million worth of cancer medication to people, you know, who don't even have cancer. Happened in the States a couple of weeks ago, I think. I think David Whitehead told me about that. And you got to be really, really concerned whenever medicine is making money. Right, if somebody broke ass and they're healing people, you know, say like Rick Simpson, for example, and they're just getting around, they're doing their thing, and they're helping people as they go. It's not too bad, is it? It's fairly trustworthy. Somebody's making millions of dollars, on the other hand, and 97% of their patients die, as the Australian Medical Association discovered was the kill rate of chemotherapy. Not the cure rate is 30%, but the kill rate is 97%. It's a weapon. Okay? They've weaponized medicine. And they're trying to kill us all. Alright? They would if they could. Because, hey, what's great about a human race that's been exterminated? Cheap real estate! Oh, yeah. I don't understand. Anyway. Over the weekend, I'm also sorry for the people who've been lusting after those Vinnie Eastwood Show archives. I've been, you know, when you work real hard for a couple of months and you just kind of like lose your mojo for a little bit and you kind of feel totally exhausted and you just can't do your work. Yeah, that was last week for me. And conveniently, I only had to do 3 shows because of Thanksgiving. By the way, happy Thanksgiving, all of those Americans who went through it. I wanted to join a Thanksgiving call with these people, but they hung up the call before I could have a chance to join. I don't think that was because of me, but I wanted to say happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I bring gifts, smallpox blankets for everybody. You know, it'd be nice. Festive season, reminding people about genocide. I think that's kind of my day. That's kind of like, you know, one of my callings. I love holidays. And I also love exposing scumbaggery. What's not to like? Is there an outlet to all of this frustration? You know, you get really angry, you learn about how you're being exterminated, you learn about how you're a slave, but then something happens. The seasons change. The summer comes in. The summer in the city. And we have a wee song that we just recorded over the weekend, myself and my bandmate, because it's the new summer schedule for the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we thought we'd do a nice summery song for you. So, AFR, if you're there on the board, if you could roll that track immediately, that would be very nice. AFR, are you there?
Ooh, in the summertime, in the city, when the girls are all so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds. When the sun shines down. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are looking so pretty, with all those nice fresh fruits and vegetables tended by vendors on the side of the street making a living. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. The heat and temperature is rising much faster than yours.
if I can contemplate all the implications upon you now. The summer, the city, things are heating up. In the summer, in the city, you have a half full cup. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when those girls are so pretty. Don't care about me in the summer, in the city, when those girls are so pretty. They distract me from all the important things as I get sold quietly into slavery in the summer. Yeah, in the city.
There you go, folks. Hope you all enjoyed that. Yeah, it's the new summer schedule. It's a summery song, I thought, you know. And we put it together in about 24 hours. I spoke to a couple of musicians on the weekend. One who's been practicing guitar for 7 years and can't hold a tune. And another who's been writing for 10 years and hasn't published a song. And that's what I come up with in 24 hours. Okay, here's the problem. Musicians are afraid of being judged. That's it, in a nutshell. That's the reason why musicians don't publish their work. They're afraid to be judged. Allow yourself to be judged. Hey, if nobody criticizes you, how on earth are you going to correct any problems with your work? All right? They take it very personally and offensive if you insult their song or say that they can't play their instrument. But the fact of the matter is, if you can't play and you can't sing, isn't it a good idea if somebody tells you about it? You know? That way you can practice more so that you can play, or practice more so that you can sing, you know? Improve yourself in some way. If you got something raw there and it needs to get out, why hold the world hostage, right? And by that, I mean, let's say poetry, for example. You've got 10 books of poetry at home that you've written yourself, but you haven't published any of them. You've never gone to so much as a cafe to read them out in an open mic night or anything of that nature. You haven't done anything with it. What you're doing is you're depriving the world of your contributions to the artistic elements and arts, you know? Don't do it. Just get it finished, whatever it is. Finished enough. You know, the song we just played this, far from perfect. But at least I got something, you know, some good elements in there. A little bit of engineering here or there, should we write? Okay, that's, I think, what all musicians and artists of all kinds should really start thinking about is how to stop fearing criticism and just start getting your content out there for people to enjoy. All right? Don't doubt yourself. That's other people's job. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is the summer schedule for those of you who are freezing to death in the Northern Hemisphere day after tomorrow type situation. It's quite cruel, actually. I'm like laughing at you all because you're freezing while I'm like hot as frick under these lights. But, you know, okay. Let me just back up the truck a little bit here. Because I was thinking about finances, right? Like Vinnie Eastwood Show finances. And one of my really great listeners, James, has donated enough cash so that I can purchase a new computer. It has been purchased. It is on its way. When it gets here, a lot of things are going to change, right? So let me explain the protocol. I have no producer to get guests for me. I have nobody to edit the videos, nobody to edit the archives, nobody to upload for me, nobody to write for me, nobody to do anything for me, other than the only people that are actually there to help me in terms of the production of the Vinnie Eastwood Show are the board ops at American Freedom Radio, who are incidentally doing it pro bono. Okay? So I'm going out to protests, filming them, speaking at them, that kind of thing, bringing all the technology, bringing the banners for people. I'm going out to public meetings, filming them, editing them, uploading them. So by myself, I am the center of protesting coverage, the center of public meeting coverage, and the center of a 2 hour per day in radio, audio and video format every day of the week. Okay, this is what I do. It's a shockingly, shockingly large amount of work. And when you do huge amounts of work, you sometimes burn yourself out and you can't do it for about a week or so, and you're going to go at half pace. And that's what happened last week. When a new computer arrives, however, things will be different, I hope. I would like an intern, please, if you are in Auckland and you want to learn how to do what I do. And believe me, you are not going to find this easy. This is going to be very, very difficult for you. So If you want to volunteer for me, you best be prepared to work your ass off for absolutely nothing. For years, same way I did. Learn everything from the ground up and wind up eventually using your skills to help enough people so that people will help you by giving generous donations and what have you, okay? That's kind of what I expect, because that's what I expected of myself, and I did it. It's about perseverance. It's not about, like, following orders and what have you. It's just about learning, really, really learning, and taking the time to do the work that is absolutely necessary, simply because of the fact that I've now got too much work. Too much work. There is too much for just me to do alone at this point. Just doing the radio show alone, if I didn't even have to do any public meetings or protests, is still quite difficult and extraordinarily time-consuming. And because I've only got one computer, it makes it all the more difficult. You know? I mean, think about this. If I've got two computers, one next to each other, often what will happen is I will not be capable of editing, say, audio and video at the same time, because, you know, I can only concentrate on one thing at a time, right? I can have both the programs open, but one of them's going to finish before I can start to do the other one. If I have two people simultaneously, me editing one thing, the intern editing the other thing, that way we get everything done in half the time. Isn't it? Which will allow me a little bit of extra time to do those videos for public meetings and things such as the documentary film Take Back Your Power. Some of the promoters of that film in New Zealand put on a public meeting earlier last week, which I filmed, and I have not even begun to edit, because I've just been either A, incredibly exhausted just from all the work that I've been doing, or B, just not even having the time, you know? I'm just so busy with other stuff. It's quite a terrible situation at this particular moment in time. The entire reason why any of this is even possible at all, why I can even do any of the videos or any of the radio shows, is not because of me. Necessarily, I'm just the man behind the curtain working the levers and what have you. It's actually you. Okay? If you listen to the show, you contribute hits to the website automatically and you give me more credibility by default. If you financially contribute to the show, I purchase food and rent, and that allows the show to continue. Which reminds me, I think I got like a $140 internet bill that I got to pay off as well. Some donations for that one would be really nice. Extraordinary expenses, such as just rent, food, and your daily things, actually not really all that much when you think about it. So, what my plan is, and this is if you will it, if you, the listeners, actually will it to happen, it will. If you donate monthly to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, whether it be $5, $10, whatever, some people do $100. Some people just recently signed up to do 50. Let's try and get in those regular donations, okay? Because if I've got a baseline of funding to work from, then there's things that I can do, much like how I rapidly expand and find utilization for all this new equipment that gets donated to me by generous listeners like yourself. But on top of that, if you've got enough funds available, it allows you to do certain other things. For example, there's many times when I've been contacted by people that are halfway down the frickin' country who need me to come cover a court case, and I can't. Just can't. Why? Because I'm broke. Because not enough donations are coming in. And that's it. And that person winds up going to jail for years and years, and nobody gets to tell their story. Because I don't have enough money to go down and get them. All right? That really Fs me off. And that ain't your fault. That's my fault. You know? I could be doing the show one day a week and have a slave job and hate myself the majority of the time and get really depressed and start getting psycho and angry at everybody, like I was when I was working before I started doing all of this stuff full time. But I wouldn't get a tenth of the work accomplished that I have when I'm doing it full time. You see what I'm saying? Those financial contributions, let's think about expansion. Let's talk about aggressive expansion. This needs to happen because there ain't a media in this country. There just ain't. That doesn't freaking exist. Media has to do things like be honest, like tell people stories that they don't want to hear because they have to hear it. Okay? We don't have that in this country. It doesn't freaking exist. I'm really angry about that as well. I hear this Sean Plonker freaking scumbag. Right, I'm not afraid to call him a scumbag. He is a scumbag. Talk radio show host here in New Zealand. You know, one of those real typical pituitary arrogant fracks who are just mean to everybody, use nothing but ad hominem insult in order to make their freaking points. That is your choice. It's him or some other flavor of him. There isn't a media in this country. And I need people's help so that I can expand what I'm doing. I want to have enough time, resources, staff, and effort so that I can bring these activists, like say Penny Bright or Russell Malcolm or Ben Vidgen or any of these other incredible, incredible New Zealand activists that have a natural voice for radio, and just bring them into my studio every week so that they can do their own little weekly radio show to start off with. And if they want to, I'll want to be able to give them the resources, you know, just give them a little computer or something like that and a microphone so that they can go home, record their own radio shows, and I'll give them a website as well. I can just make pages on my website fairly easily enough for which they can upload all their little shows by themselves so that they don't really need me to help them in any way, shape, or form. I'll just give them the tools they can do it themselves. That way, I want to create a New Zealand-wide, because guerrilla media is global, okay? It's a global idea, all right? So we've got lots of people at realguerrillamedia.com that are already contributing with their RSS feeds, and there's plenty of information downloading there. However, because of the fact that New Zealand does not have a media, really at all, to any degree, I'm going to have to create it. All right, just like it didn't have a five-day-a-week talk radio show talking about conspiracy, I created it. It didn't have a YouTube channel that was outranking the mainstream media, I created it. All right, this is what I do. I see a problem, and I create the solution. That's what makes me different from the other 5 million New Zealanders walking the earth today. I actually saw a problem and solved it. Mm-hmm. You get the idea now? How serious I am about this? How effed off I am at these scum that are lying to everybody all day, every day. How much work and effort it takes to expose that scumbaggery and offer the alternative, i.e. the reality, to people. It's not easy. It's extraordinarily time-consuming, and it is generally relatively expensive. Okay? Now, if you want to see that happen, so I'm just talking specifically just to the New Zealanders, because we do lots of international content on this show as well, which I think the New Zealanders also need to hear. I need contributions in order to accomplish that. It's just that simple. Like, you know, you see the setup that I've got here. 72-inch LCD screen display behind me. 27-inch IMAX, two of them. A tower of lights. A camera on a tripod. Webcam. Microphone. And then that's it. Okay? And I can do all this and beat the mainstream media at their own game with just a few simple devices. I would love to have the funding to be able to do that for an activist. Okay. We have Tom Filer just joining us now, so I'm going to add him to the chat. He's my scheduled guest today. Oh, it's not working. Bugger. All right. Well, we'll talk to him after the break. So it should be fine then. But yeah, I do think that people need to take me a hell of a lot more seriously if they haven't been doing so already. I mean, sure, I joke around and like to have fun and I'm pretty laid back, but at the end of the day, I'm pretty freaking intense. And I get stuff done that other people wouldn't even conceive or dream of, you know? If somebody said 6 years ago that the most popular YouTube channel in New Zealand for news in 6 years' time will be one talking almost only about conspiracy and scumbaggery, people would have just laughed at them, you know? That's freaking nuts. How could that even be possible? Made it happen. I don't have a choice. Okay? Well, you know, what am I going to do? Sit back, watch the media lie to everybody all day, every day, watch all the activists try and approach these scum for interviews, only to have them interrupted every 5 frickin' seconds so that they can't even deliver their message amidst being insulted, ad hominem attacks, and all that kind of crap? You think I'm going to sit by and just let that frickin' happen? When there's good, decent people who are trying to save my country from tyranny, who are trying to save me from consistent toxicity in my environment? You think I'm just going to sit back and hang those people out to frickin' dry? No. No freaking way. Not on my watch. I love my country and my peoples too much. What the hell is the point in just letting all of this stuff happen? Take a stand. Once in your freaking life, if you haven't already, and do something to stop the scumbaggery or to help those who are trying to stop it. Don't sit around. Sweet Mother of Mercy! Things are bad, real bad. And it all needs your help right now, just as much as I do. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Subscribe today. Right back.
Politician, can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us, politician, can you make a right decision? Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah, for all of us. You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk? Will you bring us comfort? Will you bring us comfort? You can talk.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest now joining us from Wall Street is Tom Filer. And we still don't seem to have your webcam working there, Tom. It was working great this morning. But now, no matter how times you reset it or reconnect or do anything, it doesn't work at all, which is a real F-off. But, you know, we'll make lemonade out of lemons. Welcome to the program anyway.
Well, thank you very much, Vincent. I'll keep working on the video, see if we can get it going. But it's always great to join you and your audience.
Yes, yes. What have you been up to more recently? What have you been looking into?
Well, you know, as always, I'm working, trying to understand the investment markets, what's going on with currencies, what's going on with the stock market, the commodities. That's my business. And so that's what I spend a good deal of my time trying to figure out.
You discovered any recent elements like in the U.S. financial system that people might or should be aware of?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one thing I've been working on, I haven't made this public yet, but I've been working on what I believe are 5 priorities that people, investors and people with investment portfolios need to prioritize really immediately as well as for 2014. So if we've got some time tonight, I can maybe go over those 5 priorities Those are some of the things I'm working on, which I think people need to be very aware of. By the way.
Proceed.
Sure. I'll go through, just mention them, and then as the show goes on, we can get into a little more detail about them. One of the first priorities, and perhaps I think one of the most important ones, is to protect the value of your U.S. dollar possessions and assets. That's number one. Number two is to secure the assets in your IRA, your 401k, and in your private retirement accounts. Number three, protect your gold and silver value. Number four, get your investment assets out of their stock and bond markets. And a second part of that is to protect your deposits in their banking system. And number five, the fifth priority for your investment strategy, invest in food and natural resource assets or commodities.
So where would you like to begin in terms of explaining this? Because we only have four segments left. Got about 5 minutes left in this segment.
Okay, well, I think one of the, as I said, the first priority, one of the most important ones, and, you know, some of these, I know that you have an international audience, and so some of these are specific for U.S. investors, but there's others that are globally oriented. And I think that one thing that everybody everywhere in the world has to be very sensitive about is what's going on with currencies all over the world. And so from an investor's standpoint, you really have to take a look at your investment portfolios and your assets and understand, you know, what type of implications changing currency dynamics may have on your portfolio. And so, for example, some of the more obvious implications of things that are going on out there is this year, currencies all around the world have been depreciating. About a month and a half ago, I wrote an article and did some speaking about how currencies all across the world were, I won't say crashing, but they were devaluing quite dramatically. And this includes, for example, the Brazilian currency. Brazil took a numerous steps to try to support their plunging currency. The currency in South Africa, in Australia. In China, all across the world, currencies were depreciating quite dramatically. And one of the reasons for this, of course, has been over the past number of years, the U.S. dollar in its role as the world reserve currency has been devaluing itself. And, of course, this devaluation has been caused by the money printing by the U.S. Fed. And what this has done is this has lowered the value of the U.S. dollar all across the world, and thus it's made currencies all around the world less competitive with regards to the trade policies of the various countries around the world. And so as the U.S. dollar has depreciated, you know, caused by the quantitative easing stimulus, this has caused other currencies or other countries all around the world to depreciate their currencies. And it actually got to a point about a month and a half ago where currencies were beginning to spiral down almost out of control.
Can we see a global financial collapse coming in terms of the US dollar collapse, for example? A lot of people have been talking about this for some years, that the pressure being put on the US economy by the sheer weight of the quantity of money that's being created out of nothing is enough to set off a chain reaction to bring the whole world's economy down.
Yes. You know, as you mentioned, Vincent, people have been concerned about that for years. And as time has gone on, as the dollar has depreciated further every year, that possibility becomes more and more at our doorstep, so to speak. For example, let me tell you one of the problems that the United States faces is like threefold. Number one, as your audience, I'm sure, are well aware of, The U.S. dollar is being used in trade, bilateral trade between countries, and in the trade of oil, less and less by many, many, many countries. So countries are really beginning to drop the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency. Now, the impact of that is that that means that there's a lot of, there'll be a lot of dollars, a very high supply of dollars floating around throughout the world with no place to go. In other words, they're not being used anymore in bilateral trade and, of course, trade in such commodities as oil. Now, the problem for initially the United States and then the world with regards to this is that the dollar, in its role as the world reserve currency, has enabled the United States to acquire a very high level of debt. Been very irresponsible, and the U.S. debt has increased dramatically over the past decade, but particularly over the past 5 years. And so the United States has responded to this by, of course, printing money, so-called printing money through its quantitative easing. So now we've got the problem of the U.S. dollar being used less out there in world trade, and yet the Fed is on a money printing, a U.S. dollar printing.
Well, when you say the money printing problem has been especially big since in the last 5 years, how many years ago did the U.S. president get elected, the new one, you know, Barack H. Obama?
Well, about 5 years ago.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah, but, you know, the debt has dramatically accelerated under the current administration, but the U.S. government and the U.S. politicians have been on this path for many years. There's really been the Washington establishment has been on this path for many, many years.
Something tells me now, that they were on this path and they simply needed a slick salesman to convince everybody not only to follow the path, but to jump off the cliff at the end of it.
Well, you're right. That's where we're headed. So now the Fed has a problem with the dollar being used less out there in the world, used in bilateral trade as well as in the trade of various commodities such as oil. Now they've got a problem with the printing of the money, printing more money when there's already an oversupply of money, which is depreciating that currency, is a big problem. So right now, the Fed is in a position where the only way to support the dollar is to print less money, which means they've got to begin to so-called taper back from the excessive money printing that they're engaged in now. So
it's kind of like a cancer out of control. And so naturally, their cure for this cancer, which they're creating, is to create even more cancer.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we had a little taste of the possibility of the Fed tapering or pulling back from the quantitative easing or the money printing back in May, June, July, and August, when they even hinted at tapering. We saw interest rates begin to skyrocket.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll get into this more after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Tom Filer, Wall Street extraordinaire, is my guest. We'll be right back.